If one wants to find out about the truth of the promised Messiah, yes, there are some criteria provided. But how one can make sure that these criteria do really apply upon the promised Messiah?
Now that's very, very easy and very, not at all difficult. If you read the criteria as mentioned in the Holy Quran, you will be surprised to find a very specific order and scientific treatment of this question. It's the most beautiful book that could ever be revealed to man. In no other book you find such scientific and complete and orderly treatment of fundamental questions which are facing humankind. So the Holy Quran begins first with the past of a prophet. He has a present, he has a past, and he has a future. All three things. And if the people who know the past, they are not told of any argument which relates to the past of a prophet, they would not be well provided with sufficient argument, because they may not live long enough to see his immediate present or his future. For them, the moment the claim is made, whatever is available is just the past. So a very important fundamental argument has to be provided regarding the past. The Holy Quran begins with that. It says, tells the Holy Prophet to tell them, فَلَقَدْ لَبِسْتُ فِيكُمْ أُمُرًا مِّنْ قَبْلِهِ أَفَلَا تَعْقِلُونَ. If you are wondering at my claim and you are blaming me for forgery against Allah, have you not seen my past? It is a blameless past. Almost 40 years had passed since, and his claim was made at a ripe, mature age of 40 or about thereof. And in the childhood, a man cannot, however clever he is, imitate things to a degree that all the people around are befooled, or act in a manner that he befools others about his reality. Child is an open book to everybody. And everybody knows his trends, his thoughts, his actions, his tendencies. Everything is open. So the childhood has passed before everybody. Then the youth is the age of hot blood. In every manner, it cannot contain itself, its desires, and it cannot, in reality, lead a life of hypocrisy, particularly when hypocrisy is not required. In a rotten society, when there are no laws, when there is pride in having wines and women, when pride is taken in destroying others and usurping others' properties, what need of hypocrisy is there? None whatsoever, because they are not evils, they are things of pride. Yet a prophet does not participate in those things. I mean the would-be prophet. So there is no hypocrisy about him, no requirement of any hypocrisy about him. Then he enters the ripe age where wisdom overtakes the sentiments, and throughout his career he is clean and innocent. What suddenly happens to him one night, that the one who never attributed wrongly things to ordinary human beings begins to attribute things to his creator. And he's not made like that. His whole previous character belies these things. Now this argument about the character, according to the Holy Quran, only applies to the past. And this is the most beautiful part of this argument. Once a claim is made, then the era of hatred begins. And once the era of hatred begins, everybody would point to one fault or the other. So no neutral opinion can be obtained after the claimant has made the claim. So the Holy Quran never challenges about the conduct of the Prophet after the claim has been made. That is the beauty of the book. It says you had a right to point out to the flaws, to the defects in character, to the immoralities, before he had made the claim. Because then you had neutralized, and then he had a neutral life before you. Simple and clean and apparent in every respect. So if not a single blemish can be thrown upon his previous life, then after the hatred begins, then you have no right then to start alleging things against him or concocting things against him. That is unreal, unrealistic, and in fact most abominable idea for anyone who is hating someone and then alleging things against him. While he had an opportunity before the hatred began to find out his defects, and even after the challenge is thrown, still he cannot point out to a single incident where he was found to be at fault. So when the challenge is thrown, it is not thrown only to the unwary eye. People could have said, well, previously we did not want to say things about him. We knew that happened and that happened and that happened, but there was no need to. But now we can tell you, at that time he was caught stealing, at that time he was behaving like this, at that time he was being dishonest. So a host of allegations could have cropped up regarding to the past, because the people who observed his life were living. None comes. That is the beauty of the challenge. So when this happens, then Allah tells us in a way that you forfeit your right to speak about his character, because the time when his character was naked, that was the time for you to object to it. So that is the argument, as I said, which relates to the past. And the argument about the present is mentioned in that verse of the Holy Quran, which I quoted in one of the earlier sessions here. وَلَوْ تَقَوَّلَ عَلَيْنَا بَعْضُ الْأَقَاوِي لَأَخَذْنَا مِنْهُ بِالْيَمِينَ ثُمَّ لَقَطَعْنَا مِنْهُ الْوَتِينَ فَمَا مِنْكُمْ مِنْ أَحَدٍ عَنْهُ حَاجِزِينَ. Of that I have made enough explanation in the previous, so you can join that with this and put it in order. That is about the present according to me. When the claimant has made the claim, and as long as he lives, that is what I call his presence. And during his lifetime, his efforts have to be frustrated and annihilated. And so much so that the world should be able to see and judge that this man had no support from Allah, and he had, on the other hand, some sort of support from some people. So that support of no avail to him. Either this, or he should have been totally rejected as a madman. These are the two treatments possible to a false claimant of prophethood. So if they do not happen in the lifetime of a prophet, then nobody has a right to say that he is a liar. And also about that, as I supported this argument by another verse of the Holy Quran, according to the Holy Quran, no man has a right to reject anyone's claim that he has received Allah's revelation. By itself, on principle, nobody has a right. Because the moment he makes this right, acquires this right, to declare that somebody is definitely a liar, Allah has not spoken to him, immediately he is virtually making either of the two claims. Now this analysis has to be fully understood. Either he is saying that Allah cannot speak to any person without calling me a witness, and because I was not there when Allah should have spoken to him, I should have been there. So as I was never called to witness by Allah, so he is definitely a liar. Either this claim is to be made by him, that Allah cannot move without his presence, or he should make a claim like Allah, that he is omniscient, he knows everything, whatever goes. So it is his personal knowledge that Allah did not speak to him. Otherwise, this is such an absurd claim. You say Allah has spoken to me, and somebody say, I tell you definitely he is a liar. This cannot happen. All that you can reasonably say is, we don't know. We don't believe. Because somehow we are not satisfied. But we don't know. That's all. Beyond that, the Holy Quran does not give anybody a right to go. So this is the interesting situation in which we find the enemies of a claimant of prophethood. The moment he makes the claim that Allah has revealed to me and appointed me to such and such office, immediately they begin to deny and say he is a liar, he is an impostor, it cannot happen. How do they know? Their position is like two madmen. Somebody once visited an asylum for madmen, and he found one person sitting underneath a tree. So he said, who are you? He said, I am a prophet of God, Allah has sent me. So on the top of the tree, there was someone sitting. He said, he's a liar, I never sent him. You see? So they become everything, and God is left out entirely. When they say he is not sent by God, in reality they are claiming we never sent him, we know. So he is not sent from God. You are neither here nor there, what right have you to interfere? And this is exactly what was said by the person who belonged, according to the Holy Quran, to the people of Pharaoh, who had quietly and slyly accepted Hazrat Moses. When he saw people designing against him and plotting for his murder and things, this is what he said, In yaku kaziban fa alayhi kisbo. We don't know whether he has positively told a lie or not, we can't know, we are not in a position to judge. So either of the two things are possible, that is the most logical approach. Either he is a liar or he is a truthful person, there is no third possibility. So if he is a liar, what has it got to do with you? Don't believe in him, that's all, but leave him alone. Because if he is a liar, alayhi kizbo, kazebo, not kizbo, but alayhi kazebo, against him will be his lie. Allah is not going to punish you for his lies. So what is wrong with you? What is hurting you? But if he is right, he is honest and he is truthful, then you will have it. Then you will certainly have had it. And you will be destroyed. So prophets are treated in their presence like this. And it also sows the seed for that claim in the Holy Quran, لَا تَقَوَّلَ عَلَيْنَا بَعْضُ الْأَخَابِ. It is Allah's job to destroy such people then, not the job of the people who are addressed, but the job of the one who is supposed to have sent him. It is just like what happens in the world governments. If somebody comes to you and claims that I belong to police, and he has a police costume and uniform on him, and he says that I have brought this order from the headquarters, so you come with me. Now, if you do not believe in him, what you will do, you will report his case to the police, because you think he is an impostor. If you believe in him, you will follow him. There is no third possibility. But to be on the safe side, you will not start beating him. You will not start beating him. Because if he happens to be from the police, then you have had it. So that is exactly the argument put forward by the person from Moses' people, now from Pharaoh's people. He said, behave sensibly at least. Don't interfere. This is not your job. This is the job of the one who has sent or who has not sent. That's all. So, you have to know, but if the government has not sent him, and government is in the picture of what is happening, and the government keeps quiet about it, then it is the fault of the government. Either that government is paralyzed, or it should be understood that the government has accepted his position as its representative. That is the only logical conclusion. So in this case, somebody does not have to report to Allah. In this case, Allah knows that, and they do not know. But to make things easy for them, Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam even suggested a complaint lodged against Hazrat Mirza Sahib to Allah. That, O Allah, if you do not know, we tell you that an imposter is born and he should be destroyed. This is exactly what Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam has written in one of his challenges. He says, you say I have been planted by the British. I claim I have been planted by Allah. And you think Allah doesn't know it. And so he's not destroying me. And unnecessarily, without your right, without any wisdom behind this action, you are taking it to yourself to destroy me and uproot me. So the fundamental thing is, either Allah has sent me or he has not sent me. So I suggest a better way. Start praying to Allah. Start prostrating to him. And make hue and cry against me. That, O Allah, an imposter has come and nobody has destroyed them. There it is possible, in principle, for a child to become a companion in the sight of Allah. And it is also possible for an adult not to be counted among companions in the sight of Allah. A so-called claimant to prophethood. But I assure you that I have been planted by Allah. So if you go on prostrating before Allah and crying to him, you may wipe your foreheads out by rubbing on the ground. You may destroy and shed the entire If by crying excessively your eyelashes are shed and the halqa is the round thing in which the eye is encased, in fact. Socket, that's better. And your sockets get rotted by crying excessively. Even then, Allah will not listen to you. And Allah will make me prosperous before your eyes. Because I have been planted by Allah and not by anybody else. This is the claim. And this is, in fact, the most logical challenge that could be thrown by a prophet or a claimant to the non-believers. He has suggested the right way. You say he has not sent me, and I say he has sent me, so go to him. And put your complaint, lodge your complaint before him in his court against me. So that is also an argument, or a branch of the same argument which I mentioned earlier, which belongs to the presence. So, ultimately he dies, he departs this earth for his creator ultimately, goes to him, and people of new generations begin to appear. So there has to be a lasting argument of eternal value for them to apply to the future of the Prophet as well. So that nobody can say that we were not there in the history, we don't know what happened. So for them, the Holy Quran mentions in two places an argument of lasting nature. One is, كَتَبَ اللَّهُ لَأَغْلِبَنَّ أَنَا وَرُسُلِي. Allah has made it imperative upon himself that he and his prophets would positively become victorious. None can change this verdict, this decree of Allah. What a forceful declaration by Allah. So that is a challenge thrown for the future and forever. This is why when Jesus Christ came and he was opposed, according to the Holy Quran, Allah, do you know what Allah promised him? From now on, you will go on gaining ground and the Jews, your opponents, would go on losing ground until a time is going to come that forever and forever you will gain an ascendancy upon the Jews which will never be reversed. That was the eternal argument. And the same argument applies, in fact, to every prophet. That once the inception of that message has taken root, it has come into being. Since then, it is always one result when the two sides come to clash. Victory of the one who has sent by Allah and the defeat of the other who is opposed to him. Victory in what sense? The message goes on increasing and gaining more ground. And those who want to suppress the message, they may kill a few, they may gain some temporal ground, but in reality, as far as the faith goes, they are always defeated. If they have not accepted, their generations begin to accept. Those who are prominent in opposition, sometimes their children become prominent in support of the same value and same claim. So this is Lagle Banna Ana Varusali, which is the eternal message for all people to come, for all time to come, to prove to them that this is godly phenomena, not a worldly phenomena. And elsewhere I described the other verse of the same nature, which is أَوَلَا يَرَوْنَا أَنَّا نَاتِ الْأَرْضَ نَنْقُصُهَا مِنْ أَطْرَافِهَا أَفَهُمُ الْغَالِبُونَ. That we are decreasing their ground. Their ground is narrowing. And they think they will become victorious. How can it happen that one party is losing ground and other party is gaining ground, and the one which is losing ground, it claims that we will become victorious? It's not possible. It's most illogical. It is like what happened with one of our family members, Mir Muhammad Ahmad Sahib once. He told us a very interesting thing. When he was a student during the war days, the buses in Lahore were thoroughly packed, and there was always, if the seat was available, there was a mad rush for that seat, to occupy that seat. So he detected, he was standing in the bus, he detected a seat vacant and he rushed for it, but by the time he sat, somebody had already sat. I had occupied that seat. So he sat on the lap of that person. So he thought he had detected it first, so addressing him he said, I occupied this seat first. He said, how come it then I have become below you and then you are on top of me? If you occupied the seat first, then you should have been below and I should have been on the top. So this is impossible. This cannot happen. The same is the situation here. The person who is losing ground has no right to claim that he will become victorious. So sometimes people get confused. They say, so far Ahmadiyyat has not become victorious, and you say, the Holy Quran has said, La aghle banna ana wa rusul. We point out to them that it is not the time factor which is indicative. It is a phenomena, a positive phenomena, whose style never changes. That by the passage of time, it is always one side which is gaining ground. And it is always the other side which is losing ground. So whether victory occurs after 1,000 years or 2,000 years, one thing is certain, that as long as this phenomena is not reversed, the victory would belong to this side which is gaining ground. If that verse had not occurred in the Holy Quran, some people might have got confused about the ultimate victory of Islam. Because the enemies of Ahmadiyyat forget the point that Islam was made for the entire world. And it has not become victorious so far as the world is concerned. Even as put against single religions, it has not gained ascendancy. So the opponents of Islam could take exactly the same attitude towards Muslims as non-Ahmadis are taking towards us, and said, look here, 1400 years have passed since, it's a long time, a very long time in fact. And the Holy Quran made the claim that وَالَّذِي أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَىٰ وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ لَيُظْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّهِ وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْكَافِرُ. And in another place, the same verse ends up differently, وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْمُشْرِكُ. So 1400 years have passed and you have not become victorious against only the, against even the Christians. In India you are in minority, in China you are in minority, against Buddhists alone you are in minority, against atheists you are in minority. And you say, La aghlibanna ana wa rusuli. What is the meaning of this? Then this verse comes to help. أَوَلَا يَرَوْنَ أَنَّا نَاطِ الْأَرْضَ أَنْفُسَهَا مِنْ أَطْرَافِهَا. Islam is always on the spread. And if it ceases to be on the spread, then it has lost something. And that is the time when Allah must save Islam by sending someone. So the characteristics of Islam are retained within Islam by that movement which is come to rectify things. And that is Ahmadiyyat. The attributes of Islam regarding this claim have entirely been transferred to Ahmadiyyat. And it is they now who can claim, أَوَلَا يَرَوْنَا أَنَّا نَاطِ الْأَرْضَ نَنْقُصُهَا مِنْ أَطْرَافِهَا أَفَهُمُ الْغَالِبُونَ. So this is the most important evidence or group of evidence which we find in the Holy Quran pertaining to all three tenses, the past, the present and the future.